Welcome to Voices in Art, where we at Marshfield TV talk with artists from around the South Shore about their work, career, and life as an artist. I recently sat down with photographer Erwin Nesoff at the Hull Artists Gallery down by Nantasket Beach. We talked about his approach to composing his images, traveling for photography, and a bunch of other interesting topics.
Hi, I'm Erwin Nesoff. I'm a photographer, a member of the Hull Artists. My background is actually not in photography and not in art. I was a social worker and college professor and recently retired, so now I'm able to look at how to spend more time focusing on my art, which is photography.
Cool. Where did you teach?
I taught here in Boston at Wheelock College, and before that at a university in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Taught social work, and I ran a graduate program in nonprofit leadership.
All right, so then that leads me, where did photography come into the equation?
Interesting. I moved here from New York 10 years ago, and when I lived in New York, I had a good friend that we would go out every once in a while and photograph together. And he knew all of the technology of it and all about shutter and speed and everything, and I didn't know any of that. I would have my camera set on automatic and he'd go through all the steps of setting up the perfect shot, and then we'd go back and we'd look at our shots and we'd look at his, and they were technically perfect but a little flat, and he'd always say to me, "Wow, that's a great shot." And I was like, it never penetrated. And then he would always say I had a good eye and I got good shots, good photographs. I never thought anything of it, but I enjoyed photography, so I kept doing it. And then 10 years ago, when we moved up here, I got a notice that the Scituate Arts Association was having a juried show, and I entered three pieces. Never would have done that in New York. It just seemed too big, and I was too small. So shortly after I entered it, I got a letter that two of my pieces were accepted. So I was thrilled. I was like, gee, maybe there is something to this. And then a couple days later, I got a call that one of the pieces won first prize. And that got me started.
Yeah,
and I said, okay, this is really great. Maybe Rob was right. There is something to this, and I'm going to pursue it more.
Yeah.
So I started entering shows and won a number of prizes, had couple of my photos in art magazines and other magazines. So I really started getting the sense that maybe there is something to this photography.
So when was that? When was that first?
That was 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
When I first moved up here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I focus mostly on nature and landscape. I guess I'm kind of afraid to take photos of people because they can talk back to you and say, gee, that's not what I like. A mountain, a stream, an animal can't do that. But I really like to focus on photos that I see that could bring beauty to people that they may not get the chance to get out there and see it. Most of my photography is done when I travel. And just to kind of capture things that I think are beautiful or that people should look at and or remember, and take the photos so that they can see them.
Yeah. Does photography kind of give you an excuse to travel now?
I'm not sure if traveling gives me an excuse to do the photography or the photography gives me an excuse to travel. But some of my travel has been focused on photography. I went, last winter I went to Iceland because I always wanted to photograph the Northern Lights. And the country is beautiful. I wanted to get some photos of Iceland as well. Spent a week in Iceland in the rain and the fog and came back with no photos. Never saw the Northern Lights, but I did come back with bronchitis. So,
so it was actually a total failure.
Well, yes and no. I mean, what I did learn on that, and which I think I was knowing, is that the type of photography I do, which is natural, you can't pose it, and you take your chances.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the trip that I went, they said, you know, there's no guarantee that you'll see the Northern Lights. It's a natural phenomenon. I was willing to take the risk. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know I wouldn't see my hand in front of my face either.
That's really funny. Yeah, I guess you're right. You kind of do end up at the whim of nature.
Sort of, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Because We are.
Yeah.
We are always at the whim of nature. So in a sense, my photography to me represents that as well.
Yeah. So here, I have to look at my list real quick of questions.
Sure.
I forgot to bring out. So then I guess I should ask, so where, like, what was inspiring you? So you say it's kind of always been landscape, nature, photography, and things like that. Is that what inspires you, or is there something else sort of inspiring you to do the photography?
It's nature, landscapes, and also single subjects that I like to focus on. I like to play around with it and try to get an angle that somebody doesn't see. There's the photo that got me started was taken in Yellowstone in the middle of the winter. I went there again for photography, camping in a yurt camp in Yellowstone in the winter. One day we went to the Grand Canyon of Yellowstone to catch the sunrise. And it was 25 degrees below zero. I'd never been so cold in my life. But what happens is there's this natural phenomenon where the river gives off not steam, but a mist. Mm-hmm. And it's so cold, the mist freezes, and then the sunlight coming up hits it. And it's just beautiful. So for me, it's to not only take the photography, but to immerse myself in the scene.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I have to immerse myself in order to get the image that I'm looking for, and I really immersed myself then in 3 feet of snow at minus 25. That's the most I've immersed myself. But that's my favorite photo, and that's the photo that won first prize that got me really into understanding that maybe there is something in photography for me.
That's
that
great.
One up there.
So I'll have to take a look at it soon. So it sounds like you're talking about like that immersion in the scene and in that moment that you're trying to capture, and also that like getting a perspective on it that might be, if someone else sees it, changes the way that they've seen it. You're like finding that new perspective.
Yeah, like that photo in Yellowstone. Most people are not gonna stay at camp in Yellowstone for a week in the middle of the winter, but seeing this photo, it gives them a sense of what's out there. And for me, if you see what's out there from a different perspective, maybe it'll inspire you to work to protect it.
Yeah, I like that. All right, we're recording this in a gallery that's currently open, and a couple guests have just walked in. So we're going to take a pause on the podcast, and we'll get right back to it.
Okay. Hello, welcome. Hi. If you have any questions, just shout out. I'll do my best.
All right, we're back now that we got the gallery to ourselves. So a question I have here that I ask a lot of people, and I tend to get it's cool answers, I find.
So the pressure's on.
Yeah, no. Well, it's an interesting thing, because everybody's work changes as you learn and grow as an artist. And so how would you say your work has changed since that first time you got accepted into an art show to now?
It's interesting. I've spent more time learning the actual technology of it. I did decide as I developed my work that I didn't want to use Photoshop. So it's really important for me that the photograph represent what I see through the lens of the camera and not change it too much. And now I'm looking into and starting to play around with black and white. And I'm getting ready to take the plunge to start photographing people.
Yeah.
So it's looking at how do I expand what I'm doing. I went to a show at the MFA photography show on Ansel Adams, who, you know, did all black and whites, but did all the national parks and everything. And it really inspired me to look at my work in a different way and see what it would look like as black and white. And one thing I'm learning is that when people look at color photos, often the color distracts from the subject. So in the black and white, it's just the subject. So that's what I'm starting to look into and been taking some black and whites now.
Yeah. I know what you mean by the color thing. If you're looking, it's a way to dazzle your viewer is with some colors and things like that, you know what I mean? But not necessarily, if there's other things you can get once you take that color away,
right,
and you let them take away that distraction.
Right, then they begin to look at the detail.
Yeah.
And I am in no way comparing myself to Ansel Adams, but just looking at his work and seeing it all in black and white, I was looking at these scenes, some of which I'd seen, in a completely different way. You really start focusing on the detail instead of going, oh, that color's so nice, and look at that color. Mm-hmm. And the certain, you know, the brighter colors draw the eye to the color and away from some of the other details. Mm-hmm. And with Adams, it was just all about the detail, and the work was spectacular. So it really got me thinking of looking at my work in a different way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what do you think those sorts of, like, what are the details? Do you mind, like, trying to, like, if maybe you could imagine an image or something like that?
Light and shadow, and how shadows play on the natural world, especially, and the sky. That's one thing I'm looking at, is capturing the sky in the photos, looking, you know, waiting for different types of skies, even thunderstorms, snowstorms, anything of those sorts, really changed a photo. But in a lot of his work, and I'm noticing it in some of the color photos that I've taken, when I try to look at them in black and white, then all of a sudden I start noticing more about the rock formation and how the shadow brings out different depths within the rocks, within fields, within the mountains. So it really gives you a chance to not be dazzled by the color and be dazzled by the content instead.
When I think about black and white photography, I think about this one set that I saw. I'm not going to remember the artist's name, but it was photographs from Cape Cod taken in like the 70s, all mm-hmm. black and white. And yeah, there's just something really stark about the people's shadows on the beaches. And these are pictures that I think if you could get really distracted by colors and things like that. Mm. But the way the pictures are taken, they're kind of all from the top down over people and things like that. It's really, you really get those details of
right,
where all the right. light is and what yeah. the light is doing. Yeah. You know?
And when I do color photography, I try to stay away from reds because that's really draws the eye away from everything else.
Yeah. Do you use digital or?
Digital.
Yeah, reds can really, in digital photography, can really stand out, I've found. Yeah. And they can really be distracting, mm-hmm. so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like an issue. You know what I mean? All right, so then I want to ask, like, so we're sitting here, we're in a gallery, you're curating the gallery today, your work is up on the walls. I think that constitutes a career in art.
Okay, yes.
So, what has your career kind of looked like? I know we've sort of talked about how you got started and, you know, winning this, that, the other thing, but what were some of those big moments in your career other than when it started, but when you maybe started making sales and things like that? You
know? Yeah, for me it was getting into juried shows, winning some awards, and then finding out that people liked my work enough to buy it, to purchase it. So that's been pretty recent. I'm not supporting myself as an artist. My art is supporting my art.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be. So I'm at a point now where I sell enough work to support what I do, to keep my equipment up to date and in line. One thing I am finding with photography, and it's really interesting, everybody has a camera in their phone, and the phone cameras are getting better. So I constantly get people taking photos on their phone and sending it to me and saying, what do you think about this? Isn't this great? And I'm not putting down folks that take those, but it's become a harder sell, I think, for photography, because anybody can take a photo that they like mm-hmm. And put a frame on it and hang it on the wall. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's that kind of competition happening now in photography, and that's why I think anybody looking at photography really has to find a niche, find something that they do really well that people will look at and go, wow, I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why even moving into like photographing people, doing portraiture and stuff like that is a good move in terms of a career move because you'll find, I mean, first of all, it's just such a giant world of possibilities that you can practice as an artist. You can try out all these different things. You can see, you know, who do I want to photograph? What sort of different places, situations? How can I pull the best portrait out of this person in this place? You know what I mean? Things like that.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, that's got to be really fun. I do photography too, and I'm also very nervous about doing portraits. I've got books on it. I've got equipment to do it. You know, I've got like flashes and stuff, but I'm pretty nervous about it, and my attempts at it have so far have been like mediocre. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like doing landscape or single objects, I can choose what I want and that's it. If you're taking a portrait of somebody, nobody likes their hair or their nose, or this is my good side, my bad side. It's almost like doing customer service work.
Yep.
So I'm going to try to avoid that, and I think my the portraiture that I would do would be more around street photography.
Oh, great, yeah.
Photojournalism is what I would like to do, and I don't want to be in a position where I'm hired to take portraits, but I would like to use portraits to tell stories.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, candid street photography is like some of my favorite stuff to look at, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're from New York. So, yeah, you know how great it can be.
Well, you know, even here in Boston or any place, there are a lot of stories to be told.
Yeah.
And doing it through photography, I think, is a great way to get it out there.
Yeah. Makes me think of a series I saw once again. Don't know who did it, but it was a series on a bunch of guys that in like Southern California that all made like lowriders together. And it was pictures of these dudes, you know, and first of all, just how stylish these guys are, how cool, how much they take their style into consideration, and then their cars, you know, and just really how much work goes into these cars. And then there's a book that is, all these photos are alongside sort of interviews with these guys, and the story is just so great. I mean, it's just such an interesting, kind of inspiring group of people doing this cool thing together,
right?
You know?
Yeah, one thing similar to that I'd like to do, I don't know if I'll get to it, is to go back to Cuba and take photos of people with their 1950s American cars. Because as you go through Havana or any town in Cuba on a Sunday, they're all out there making love to these cars.
Yeah.
They have to keep them running. The parts aren't available. They're painted, you know, beautiful Caribbean colors and whatever. Love to get some of their stories and photos of them with their cars. Something to look forward to.
But, if you want an assistant on that project, let me know, because that would be so great. Oh, wow. I actually just got chills imagining what that project could really look like. That would be
I have to
really
bone up on my Spanish before I do that.
Though, yeah, so. I guess I would too. But no, that's a really cool idea, actually. That's something that I've always found really interesting, is the way that because of the embargo and that they weren't getting new cars on the island.
Right.
You see all these 40s and 50s, 30s or 40s and 50s cars that they've kept in mint condition.
Absolutely, they keep them running. I don't know how they do it, but they keep them running.
Yeah, I watched
and
something.
Very proud of them.
There was a documentary about this that I saw, I can't remember where, but they were talking, these guys were like, you know, coming up with ways to rewire the cars, coming up with ways to do all these things with stuff that you would never imagine you could put on a car and it would work, you know what I mean?
One person I met when I was in Cuba and talking to him, he said, "We are great at making do," which they have to be because they don't have new parts, new things.
Yeah.
So they figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, great at making do. That's something I think everybody should have a little bit of.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I know we talked about that first time you had that piece, those two pieces get accepted and one of them made first place. I'm sure that's a big moment for you. But what's another really big moment in your career?
I had some pieces accepted to some art magazines, and that was for me a big moment also to see your work in print that way, but also to know that somebody else appreciated it enough and saw the value in it to include it in their books. So that was good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And then I'd gotten two photo stories in travel magazine, one on Alaska and one on Scandinavia, and that was good too.
Yeah.
But again, the next big moment I'm looking for, I think, is to be able to do something around photojournalism and use a series to tell a story.
Yeah, I think that's just such a great idea. I'm excited to see what you do.
Okay. Yeah. Stay tuned.
Yeah. So you told me the story about going knee deep in snow, negative 25 degree weather. You know, you told me the story about going up to see the Northern Lights and having that just get spoiled by Mother Nature. Are there any other stories from your career as a photographer you'd like to share?
This past October, I had the opportunity to spend a week out in Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. And it was the first time for me that for five or six days, did nothing but shoot photos all day long. And I just love the Southwest. I think it's just incredibly beautiful. You can go to Europe and, you know, Greece and Rome and see how old so-called civilization is. You go to the Southwest, you really get a sense of how old the earth is, from all the different earth tones and colors. Spending a whole week out there doing nothing but photographing was, it's like being as a kid, you know, and ending up in a chocolate factory or something like that. It was just really fabulous.
Chocolate factory the size of a desert.
Yeah, actually, not as a kid. I wouldn't mind that now either.
Yeah, exactly. That's really interesting. You actually just completely changed my perspective on that. I've been to Europe a few times. I've always thought, wow, if our cities could be like this and have 900, 1100 years of history represented in them, that would be so cool. But I never considered this is, it's harder to find those sort of
representations. Well, actually, we do have those cities that are 900 years old. Not the adobes, what are they called out in the Southwest? I'm losing the, the old native villages that are built out of adobe, if you go, some of them are 900 years old and still occupied.
Oh, I've got to see that.
The Taos Pueblo, I think, is about 900 years old and it's still occupied. And then you go to the ruins, the cliff dwellings, the pueblos, that's the word I was looking for. So many of them have been there. The one I remember, there's one Acoma, which is a pueblo in the sky. And they held out against the Spanish conquistadors because of where they were located.
Oh, that's cool.
It's still occupied.
Yeah.
You go to the cliff dwellings and you crawl into the little cave and you see the black smoke on the ceiling and you go, oh my gosh, somebody had a fire here over 1,000 years ago. So we do have that here.
Yeah. You just have to know what you're looking for.
Yeah. No, but it's out there. It's that, native culture. I mean, this was their land before it was ours.
Yeah.
You don't have that on the East Coast, though.
Right.
You need to go to the West Coast, to the Midwest to see that. But I wish more people would see that and appreciate the fact that Columbus didn't discover America.
Yeah.
There were a number of civilizations here long before the Europeans came.
Yeah.
We tend to forget that, and we celebrate a building that's 300 years old,
which
is pretty old here, but I drive through Hingham and all these old houses have the date when they were built, and I go, that's really nice. That's 100 years. That's 200 years. You go to Europe, like you said, people are living in homes and buildings that are you know centuries old, many centuries old.
Yeah.
But we do have that here, and I think more people need to appreciate that as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, definitely changed my perspective on that. So I know you've been talking about you want to do a sort of more documentary photo style series. Is there any other projects you have sort of like in the works right now? Anything going on?
Not yet. I'm still looking for the next idea to come up that I can pursue. The cube idea is down the road a ways, if I can pull that off. Like I said, I need to get work on my Spanish.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm going down to New Orleans in the spring for the Jazz Fest, and that's where I'm going to, I guess I do have a project, yes. And that's where I'll be practicing my street photography and photographing people and the musicians. And,
oh, I and can't
the
wait
area
to see
down
that.
There. So, yeah, so... So I'm sorry, I do have another project in mind, right?
Yeah, that's going to be great. You're going to, I mean, the level of eclectic representations of people down there, you know,
oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Oh, yeah, I've been there twice before. And just all the street musicians, every corner there's another street musician. So just to photograph those folks and all the activity around there, and the you know, we were talking about black and white, but it's a very colorful place. So yeah. To get that's an area that you would want to photograph in color to capture the sense of that.
All right, so we've got one more visitor.
Hello, how are you?
I think we'll take a break before we get to the conclusion of the podcast.
Okay.
All right, yeah, so all right, so they've just left. We're going to get back to the end of this. We'll settle things in. So I would like to ask, what advice do you have as a photographer for people who are just kind of getting into it and looking for a door to get their foot in?
All right. Well, first I'd say you don't need expensive equipment to start with. People's smartphones now have good cameras, or any digital camera can do. So get used to that, play around with it, get a feel for what you like. I think it's important to know what you like to go out there, because once you know what you like, you'll then see those subjects. And the advice I give anybody that asks me, the one piece of advice that I always give is try to, in your eye, try to separate the subject from that you're taking from its surroundings. And if that makes a photo, then take the shot. Sometimes it doesn't, and when it's out of its surroundings, it's just kind of flat. The other thing I find that people are afraid to do is get close to their subject. So take close-ups. When you find that subject that you want, move in on it. Take the shot closer. If you're looking at a landscape, there's two ways to do it. One is to be as expansive as possible. And then the other one is to really just pick one thing in that landscape and focus on that. And the beauty of digital cameras is you can take as many shots as you want. So don't be shy. Stand up. Change your perspective from standing to kneeling to laying down on the ground. Move to the left. Move to the right. Just keep shooting, and then you have the opportunity to go through them and delete what you don't like. Out of 50 shots, maybe you'll get one that you like, and that's good. I think a lot of people become very frustrated if they take a lot of shots and there's only one that they like. I've shot many, many, many shots of a subject, and I'll go back and look at them, and I don't like any of them when I put them up on the computer. So if you take a bunch of shots and you get one, that's a good day.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. So where can people go if they want to take a look at your work and whatnot?
So my website is Irwin Nesoff, irwinnesoff.zenfolio.com. So I have my work on there, and people can contact me if they're interested, and hopefully I'll be in many more shows.
Awesome. Great. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
P.S. Irwin added in a follow-up that his wife Paula is both his muse and his manager. He relies considerably on her input and opinion about his work and ideas that he should try. Thanks for listening.